Bob and Diane are in Pennsylvania, and they are then going to go on a two-week vacation. So we won't see them for the next 3 weeks.
Oh, what kind of vacation?
Mary Guyon. Greek? Is she still on?
They're going on a vacation.
Oh, yeah. You said Greek?
No, they're up in Pennsylvania.
Then 3 weeks we won't see them.
Oh,
3 weeks.
Then they're going to go on a two-week vacation.
Like
so
Greek.
For 3 weeks we won't see Bob and Diane.
I was just through Pennsylvania. I was 75 in Buffalo and 70 and 65.
Yeah.
Like, and then I come back, it's like 90.
Oh, yeah.
That's why it's 30.
Did you go to Bartow? Did you go to Bartow?
Did I what?
Did you go to Bartow, Pennsylvania?
Bartow?
To
no.
visit the St. Pedro Pio National Center?
No, I kind of go through the center of it, so I don't know where.
I've never been there.
I'm going like
But one of these days
Altoona.
I want to do that.
Yeah.
I've never been there.
Have you been in Italy? To
no.
His, oh.
No, that's the family that's descended from the little girl that Ladder regrew. And so they built the whole shrine.
Why they did
and it's in Pennsylvania. Yeah, but I don't know what part of Pennsylvania. It's not near. I think I looked it up before and I was like, huh.
Did you hear about the girl that was healed last week through Padre Pio?
No.
Of blindness?
No. Oh.
At Fatima? With
no,
World Youth Day.
Oh,
yeah. I did hear about that. Yeah, World Youth Day.
And did you hear that the church was saved in Maui?
I saw that this morning on the news.
I just saw that on the internet today.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I just saw that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I switched, I had Fox News on. I switched to Good Morning America. They wouldn't put that on. No. It wasn't on. Well,
that's amazing,
me.
Yeah.
Should be all over. Yeah.
It
but
should be all over,
two
yeah.
secular stations put on about Sister Wilhelmina.
Ooh.
Oh, they did?
Well,
yes.
That's good.
Ah, very good.
Okay. The priest that came to Holy Trinity to talk about the Holy Face devotion, he was a mentor with her.
Ooh.
Oh, really?
And she was the one that suggested the Holy Face for him to research it, and he wrote it. He wrote a
Jesus
book.
Appeared to some nun, I can't remember. And I said, I want a medal struck with my holy face. I have the prayer card that talks about it.
Yeah. And, you know, I have his book. I left it at my mom's so my sister-in-law can read it. And it says you can join the confraternity in France, and that's one of the requirements. So I did it before I left, and I came back, and they sent me a whole package, and they sent me a scapular, and it's white, and it's in French, and it's the Holy Face.
Aww.
He sent me a little medal and a certificate, and they asked for a donation. And they gave me their routing number. How do I keep it to France? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
My husband said send a check, and they'll figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I sent once to some place with some holy oil. The lamp keeps burning and all that stuff, and... Yeah, it was, I don't know, it was a Sweden someplace. But it's kind of weird when you send a check over, you know. But
I think it was
cash. And
it was cash?
Oh, and then I sent a check to John McNally when he was still alive, the Irish singer.
Yeah.
My husband went on the computer and got the website and was able to text him or whatever. And then I texted him, and he texted back to me. I still save it. Like, I have. And then I said, I can't find your latest CD in this country. He said, I'll mail you one. So he sent it, and I sent back the money. And it was fine. But then when he passed away, I sent the mass card to his wife. I'm like a kid, you know. She sent me the program from church. She sent me a CD or DVD of his latest concert and a beautiful handwritten letter.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I treasure that, you know.
Took a lot of time and care.
Beautiful Anne, and she said, we live in Australia. Thank God the family is here. Well, no, they're in Ireland, but they visit.
Yeah.
I was so touched.
Wow.
You know, it was just,
really?
I would have sent the mask on anyway.
Kind.
But to get a letter back, I was like a kid, you know.
That's really nice. That's really nice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Good. Let's see. Where are we? 5282, I think.
5282.
I got 5284.
Yeah, 5284.
Oh, I'm behind. I got 5283.
Are you sure? It's 5?
5283,
I thought. 5283,
because I marked
it.
Yeah, I marked it 151.
Right.
I guess I thought we were done with it. I wrote on that one.
I just hope.
Yeah.
I said that was just hope.
That was hope. Oh, sorry. No.
I thought we were done with it. Oh, speaking of getting things in the mail, back in 1995, when I went to Medjugorje, we went through Rome for 3 days, and I found out how to get relics.
Oh.
So there's this monastery of Augustinian nuns that have the charge of all the relics of the church. Mm. So, and they're under the supervision of one of the cardinals. Really old monastery building, just outside the gate of the Vatican, within walking distance of the Colosseum. And so you walk in, and there's a little nun behind a grate, and you tell her you want relics, and so she points to this door over here, you know, so you go through there. And they have these big books, and it's not computerized. When they get a relic in, they just write it in the book by hand, you know? Wow. So you go through the book to figure out what you want. So you figure, well, I already knew the ones I wanted anyway, so you fill out the little order form, you know, and you tell them what reliquary you want to get for the relic. And so you pay for the reliquary, because they can't sell the relics.
Just a little bug right by your mouth.
Yeah. It's been running over my head and everything else.
And, it's just coming around.
Yeah, it's flying all over the place.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Get a gun, shoot it.
Yeah, that'll work.
But you order the relics, so you give them the thing and you pay for the reliquaries. And then a week or two later, they come in the mail.
Wow.
They come in a regular envelope. In first class mail.
Oh my gosh.
And how do you just go in there and you say, I want this relic?
Or, you tell them which ones you want.
Like Padre Pio, you could say, I want a relic.
Yeah, you want a relic. Wow, I got a whole stack of relics.
Wow.
I got a relic of the True Cross and a whole bunch of other ones.
Are they second class, third class?
Or first class.
First class?
First class relics, yeah.
Wow.
I got St. Teresa of Avila and John of the Cross and St. Faustina. I got mine right after she was declared blessed. So mine says blessed St. Faustina instead of St. Faustina. Blessed Faustina.
Yeah.
But
But
they just come in an envelope in the mail. By the U.S. mail.
Yeah. Crazy.
It really
is.
I was shocked when I got that.
Right. God forbid they'd be lost.
I figured they'd be in a box certified and all that kind of
stuff.
No, just an regular envelope.
Why do they have to mail them to you? Why don't they just hand them to you right there?
Because they have to get the relic, which is like a piece of a bone or something of the saint, which they have there, and they have to put it into the reliquary and seal it.
They're not ready made.
And they're not ready made. So they have to type the name of the saint on the little round thing.
Yeah.
And then there's a kind of a glue that sticks it to the paper. And so that's got to dry.
And they don't like pulling out of this. How many bones do they have from?
Oh, they must have tons of them. But it's just a little tiny piece, you know? That's all you need.
And anybody can go do that?
Well, back when I did mine, all you had to have was a priest with you who had a letter saying he was in good standing.
You can't just walk in.
And Father Collins was with us, and so he had his letter, so we got all the ones we wanted. He got a bunch, I got a bunch. And but now they said the process has changed. Yeah. Now you have to have a letter from your bishop saying which ones you want and why and what you're going to do with them.
Yeah.
And so
that makes a little more sense.
It does.
Whole process has changed now, you know.
Yeah.
But to be so careful at that end and then to put it in the mail and send it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. It was really surprised me, you know. I figured it'd be in a box certified, you know, and everything else. No.
Yeah.
Just
in
an envelope, U.S. mail, you know.
Because they trust the mail.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
Wow. 5281.
Okay, so she says, in 5282, on account of his desires, this soul's desires, everything it can do for God becomes little in its own eyes. So she's beginning to really understand the difference between what God did for us and what we can try to do for God. And everything we can do seems so little in comparison to what he did for us. So it now understands through experience how the Lord helps and transforms a soul, for it doesn't recognize itself or its image. The weakness it previously seemed to have with regard to doing penance, it now finds is its strength. And so the soul is going through this transformation process that's guided and led by God. And so we talked about some of the examples from the martyrs last week, remember?
We did this.
So the next question is, why is penance the driver of this? What is it about penance that makes this effect in the soul's surface?
Well, it strengthens you somehow.
Yeah.
The penances you do. And you get graces from them. And it's easier maybe to overcome. Like, you get less lazy and you're stronger spiritually with penance.
And she always talks about humility. So it's more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Penance has a lot to do with humility.
Yeah.
And it's also your way of atoning for the temporal punishment due to sin,
yeah.
too. Because when a priest forgives you your sin, he then gives you a penance.
Make atonement.
You know, so you got to do something. Even if the sin is forgiven, you still owe something. And so penance is one of the ways we can pay for that extra something.
I like that expression, charity covers a multitude of sin. I love that one.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
That's like the easy way out.
St. Peter said that. Yeah. Yeah. But that's true, yeah. You know, you think about it. You're out in the street playing with your kid, and he whacks the ball, and it goes through your neighbor's window, right? So you go over to your neighbor's house, and the little kid, you know, he's standing there with his baseball hat in his hand saying, I'm sorry, I broke your window. Mm. And so the person in the house says, okay, I forgive you. But then you look at the window, you still got to pay for the window, right? So the sin is forgiven, but you still have some extra stuff you got to do to make everything right. And so the dad shells out the money for the window, and then the kid starts cutting the grass and paying the dad back, right? So you pay the father back for the for what you owe him.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of religions don't believe in that atonement for sin. Most
no,
of them don't. Oh, Jesus, you're saved.
Yeah, he did everything for me, so I'm free to go. If I die, I'll go straight to heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
They don't believe in purgatory.
Yeah, that, yeah.
Right.
Makes no sense.
Always saved.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't get the phrase. I know they had a patricians on it, but this, you know, all faiths have to go through the Catholic faith
right.
to get to heaven. What does that mean? Not everybody's Catholic. And how would you go through Catholic faith to get to heaven?
There's a lot of people, because the church is the gateway to heaven. Okay, so if you're already Catholic, that's a good thing, right? So
you get all
the sacraments.
All that aren't, you know?
You get all the sacraments, and Jesus said, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you have no life in you. Mm. You have no divine life in you. So somehow or other, people that are believers have to find a way to get there. And Jesus doesn't want to just abandon them because they don't have anything against him. Mm. You know, they're trying to live what they think is the right way to live. And so he understands that. And so somehow, when they die, they get incorporated into the church by something God's going to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know what that is. Mm-hmm. He's going to have some way to recognize their fidelity and their concern for him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then do something to kind of bring them in.
Yeah.
How he does that, we don't know.
It's logical to a degree. You know?
Yeah,
I
mean,
there's
it is.
So many
it's logical.
Protestants, you know, just
they love Jesus.
Sure.
And if they really believe, they're not searching, if you know what I mean.
Right. Just think of all those kids in the Mormon faith that
go around
in it, you know, that's all they know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So there are a lot of things like that, you know, that so it's up to God, you know. He's gonna take care of it.
Yeah.
He knows what he's gotta do for those people. It might be just giving them an inspired revelation of what, and then have them say, yes, I accept that. It could be that simple, you know. Mm-hmm. They might have to receive the Eucharist before they can get into heaven.
Well, I know it's titled was Salvation is Only Through the Catholic Church.
Yeah,
yeah.
Through the same Christ. I just think it's kind of a mystery.
Yeah, and we can't limit Christ or be bigoted and say, oh, only Catholics are going to be saved. But, you know,
that's how Father Feeney got excommunicated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he still had people following him.
I know.
He still has
people today.
Did he say only through the Catholic faith? Or?
Outside the church there is no salvation, but he took it very strictly, like they used to in the 50s and early.
Mm.
So he got excommunicated.
Yeah,
and then people were
the
still...
The church is the body of Christ.
Right.
Yeah.
And so when you think about what those words really mean, a lot of people are part of the body of Christ, just not in its fullness.
Mm. Yeah. Right. It's like they're embryos.
Yeah.
Except that thinking that way can make you, who am I to judge?
Prideful.
What's the word? The
prejudicial.
Big heresy today is.
Blasphemous?
Is, I can't think of the word, where you're just tolerant of everything. Such a common word, but I can't think of it.
Intolerant.
But it's big heresy today.
Relativism.
Yes.
Yeah. I was trying to think of it too, and I'm like, I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything's relative.
Well, that's on everything right now.
Yes.
With all the sexual issues.
Oh, sure. Everything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You be you.
That's
you
right.
You be you, you know.
And it is considered a heresy.
Yeah.
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 So penance is important. The penance does a lot of things for us. And it also gives us humility. We recognize how much we do owe God, and we try to do everything we can. And the more penance we do, the less time we spend in purgatory. Mm. And so if we do enough penance, we don't have to go to purgatory. And that's part of what Teresa's trying to get us to by going through this growth and spiritual growth in our soul and into marriage with Jesus, that we won't spend time in purgatory. That's one of her objectives.
So, I mean, does she mean just do a penance of, like, just one day say, okay, well, I'm just going to just do a penance all day, and maybe it'll cover some stuff?
Penance is anything.
Yeah.
You know,
anything
a penance can be something really small, like, I'm going to give up lunch today.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to fast on Wednesday or Friday or something like this, on bread and water for one day. Anything like that is a penance. You know, if you really want something, like, well, I saw that ice cream cone, I really want it. You say, nope, I'm gonna give up that.
Just offering up the annoyance.
Just, yeah.
I had such a big one the other day, and I just complained the whole time, so I missed my boat. We were at McDonald's.
Right, you
all
can't
the graces
complain.
You could have gotten from
we
that.
We were at McDonald's, and it took almost an hour to get our meal.
Oh, my gosh.
It was done in 45 minutes, and someone took it. And so then we had to wait again.
Oh, my God.
I complained so bad.
She's
not
still
loud.
Complained.
I know. It was so bad. And my back was hurting. I was standing there.
Oh, that's a penance.
Right. Stop.
Go down the street to Wendy's.
We already paid. I told my sister, we already gave up our time. We're in it now.
And I always laugh. I think when you reach a certain age, just getting through the day is a penance.
Oh, you're right.
Right?
Yeah.
I said,
yeah.
Well, get me through the day. You know, I'll accept everything. You know, it's like you got a million things to get through the day and do everything.
Yeah.
And, of course, the reading was over the weekend somewhere. I forgot when it was. You got to get up. This is God's day. You might have a plan for it, but he has it. It was in the Magnificat, one of the days.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, man, that was a good one. Like, you're getting up and you're like, this is God's plan for the day. Whatever you think's going to happen is not it.
Exactly.
Yeah, God does that a lot. You know?
Yeah.
You want to give God a good laugh, tell him what your plans are, right? So. Okay, so penance has a lot of things associated with it. It's paying back to God. Even if you're not compensating for some sin or something, you can still do penance to compensate for everything he did for you as a way of thanking it. And, you know, Christina Gallagher said that every time somebody converts, it means somebody suffered for them.
Mm-hmm.
So penance can be a way of being an instrument in the conversion of somebody else. So there are all kinds of different things that penance can do for us or for somebody else. So it's a good thing. 5284. It's attachment to relatives or friends or wealth as the soul's attachment. It's now so looked upon that it grieves when obliged to do what is necessary in this regard so as not to offend God. Everything wearies it, for it has learned through experience that creatures cannot give it true rest. This is kind of an extreme statement, but in her case, it was true. You know, she felt everything except attachment to God was a burden, regardless of who it was with.
And how old was she when she died?
What was it? I think it tells us in here. I think it tells you in the introduction. She was like 60, I think.
She did a lot of work traveling.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, she did a lifetime.
Yeah, she did a lot of traveling. Introduction. Yeah, I think it said she was like 60.
Well, I have an idea that it's close enough. Yeah. But you think of so many older people, even older than us, who are just ready to die. They're tired of life. They're just like Ellen. She always wants to be with God. Do you know Ellen?
I knew a priest who was a Marine chaplain, and he said, I'm always volunteering to go out with the troops because if I get killed, I go, and so I'm a, you know, I'm a mortar.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But he never did. He's still around.
I should know it's a Carmelite, right? But I'm so good on dates, right?
Yeah.
That's okay. That's close enough. I was just wondering how long
I don't remember that stuff.
I thought it said here.
She started this book when she was 62.
I thought it told us in the introduction, but I don't see it.
It was the last book she
wrote. She was 67. Died October 4th.
Yeah. October
4th? 1582.
Oh, 67.
67
back then
is kind of
old.
That was kind of old back then,
yeah.
EWTN had a thing on her life, and it showed her on her deathbed about to die, and she was looking out the window, just waiting to leave to go to heaven, you know.
Wow.
It was very peaceful.
That's how the founder of the Legion of Mary died, in his bed, looking at the picture of Jesus in his bed.
Yep. It's a good way to go.
Mm.
So she's saying that the soul doesn't want to have any attachment to anything except God at this point. That's its main attachment. Mm. And not attachment to relatives, friends, or wealth or anything else. Because everything wearies it except the relationship with God. And but a lot of people can't get to that point.
Mm.
Because we do have relatives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have children we have responsibilities for. Mm. We've got spouses we got responsibilities for. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that. You got the life of your parish, too.
Mm.
You're not in a monastery. Mm. You're not in a convent. We live in a parish, and we have parish responsibilities and duties and stuff like this. And so most of us are not going to get to this point that she's talking about here, where everything worries you except the relationship with God.
But you can get the sense too, though, your relationship with God should be the most important.
Oh, it
that's
is.
Like a step.
Yeah.
That's
it has
that's
to
number
be.
One. That's your whole life.
Yeah.
You know.
You got to have
and
your priorities.
It gradually goes into it, and then also I think it's a journey. I mean, when you're young, you have tremendous responsibilities. I don't know. See, there's a difference.
Yeah.
You know, it's like your spiritual life somehow goes along with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know.
It is a journey.
It's a journey.
You know. In Luke's gospel, the kind of the transfiguration, they talked with Jesus, Elijah and Moses, about the exodus he was about to begin in Jerusalem. The other gospels don't mention it, but Luke does. And Moses had predicted in Deuteronomy that God will send another like me to lead you. But Jesus was going to his passion at that time. And so after the resurrection, he's now the new Moses leading us to the final promised land. So we're all on an exodus.
Mm.
Just like you said, we are on a journey.
Mm. And I think, you know, different commandments apply to you in your different stages of life. And, you know, I think now mine is honor your parents, you know, when they're aged
right.
and stuff.
Right.
Well, my father passed away, but, you know, my mother...
Sure.
So we're all doing it. And then when you're younger and you have the little kids, it's like
the kids,
they
the
educate them and, you know, in the faith.
Sure, you got all these responsibilities.
Yeah.
And then if you're a grandparent, you got to start educating grandkids.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm really blessed that we have at least three of our grandkids that live with us.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, because,
influence.
I mean, they're always coming down and
it's
talking
wonderful.
To us and everything, you know, and so they have
live with you.
They have all these adults living with these kids.
Especially the kids, though.
Yeah.
Because I live with my grandmother, the whole family, mother, father, three uncles, a bachelor friend, and
But you were an only child.
I was an only child, yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people come back to the faith, and they'll ask them why, and they'll say, because my grandmother was
you
religious.
You do see that?
Yeah.
Because I have, my nephew's children aren't baptized, but they're spending a lot of time with the grandmother and great-grandmother.
And I
so.
Think even if they're disabled, just our only job is to pray for our grandkids.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because really it's only prayer.
Yeah.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
Like the kids, some of ours went to a great camp, or they go to Franciscan, but they don't, you know, necessarily get holy right away. And you're thinking, God, I'm
it's a growth process.
Yeah,
yeah.
Really, He does it, and you have to mainly.
Oh yes, it's out of our hands.
I saw a really good homily on YouTube, and the priest, I think it was that father that just died, Father Beard.
Yeah.
And he gave one, and he was saying, he goes, I hear from so many people in confession how I'm praying to God and He's not doing anything.
Oh, yeah, that's a major complaint.
He's not doing it. And he goes, if you didn't pray for those people, they would be worse off. He said, you know, they're there. They're hanging in there because you are praying for them.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it was so good. It was really good. Homework.
And like you said earlier, the penance, when someone converts, it's somebody.
Yeah.
So old people have all these things wrong with them.
Yeah.
So they can offer it up.
Sure.
Right, right.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
See, the morning offering, I offer you all my joys, sorrows, and everything else of the day, you know, because you're always going to have them.
Yeah.
I got two herniated discs in my back, and it hurts me all day long, but nothing I can do about it. So the only thing I can do is offer it up.
You can't live on ibuprofen, so
no.
I gave that up.
Yeah.
I roll that garbage.
So,
it's easy to live with it.
You don't have any choice. You can just either complain about it or offer it up, you know?
And
why complain?
Away.
It's not going to do any good.
Exactly. It always wears away.
Yeah. So she was at a point where in her convent, all she wanted to do was stay in a room and, you know, devotes to this. But she wrote this for her sisters. Those of us in the world do have necessary attachments to family, you know, spouses, children and stuff, and have employment obligations. Some of these are mandated by God's commandments. How does one fulfill these obligations and still follow Teresa's advice? So how would you try to do what she's talking about by devoting yourself to this developing relationship with God and still meet other obligations?
Live in the presence of Christ. You can be doing work, but you can still think of Him, or, you know, offer up, I think it was Brother Lawrence, before he did anything, that was offered up to Jesus. So that was, of course, a prayer. And then when he said, when he finished it, he thanked Him. I never thought to thank you that I was able to do it.
That's right.
You know? Because you got to do your chores. You have to do your work.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah, he was a dishwasher in the monastery. And he hated washing dishes.
Poor guy.
But he said he washed the dishes and he'd pray, drop to his knees when he finished. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to serve my fellow monks.
Yeah. Mother Teresa would always say at Hail Mary, extra one for thanking. Like you do the three Hail Marys,
and then
she'd do an extra one to say thank you for doing it.
Yeah.
For whatever they were praying for.
Yeah.
So all those kind of things, a little extra things we can do, but the whole thing is prioritizing your life. You know, you got to put God first, and then other things come after. You know, if you got a family, you know, it's God, spouse, children. If you don't have a family, it's God, church obligations, work employment obligations, and stuff like this. The problem some people have is that some employers demand you put them first.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're in the medical field or the policeman or the military or something like this.
Or even just climbing the corporate ladder. How many men go ahead of their families.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, like it's so hard for people working today because you can never. Everybody's attached with that phone.
Yeah.
No, and they make
you're
it that way.
You're supposed to answer it immediately. You know,
yeah.
They say it's so much worse because now it's so available.
It's so and you're expected to do that.
That's right.
Like you don't leave work.
You have an email
and
at night. You know, you got to answer it. They know you see it.
Sure.
Yeah.
When I retired from the government, I went to work for a company that was supporting DOD and the intelligence community. And they did a lot of work with that. And it was one of these nonprofits, FFRDC kind of companies. And we had a series of managers that were called E7s. They were seventh levels, and they were all executives. And these guys have been working their way up the ladder, you know. This one particular guy was super politically conscious in the politics of the company. Mm. I mean, his future was the company, you know. Mm. He's married, he had kids, everything. And one day, they all came into work, and the guys at the top said, everybody who's an E7 is fired today. Mm. We can't afford you guys anymore.
Wow.
And so some of the guys said, oh, I'll go work for somebody else, you know. They had a lot of skills and talents. Mm. This guy was so wrapped up in the company, he committed suicide.
Mm. Yeah. Wow.
That's sad.
It's very, very, very sad to be so wrapped up in a company that you commit suicide. It's...
You know what my husband used to say? He was a VP at Citibank. He used to laugh and say, yeah, and there's a lot of them. He'd say, I leave work. The door's closed. I shut it off.
Yeah, he had a great
he said it's there.
Yeah, and a good sense of humor.
Well, I mean, nowadays, it's not even employment. It's the social media.
Yeah.
These people have, you know, followers, and then something happens in their life, and they crash, and they're canceled, and then, they can't handle it.
Yep.
And you think, really, that's not even reality.
Right.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
Right.
So there are a lot of things like that that we have to deal with, but it's putting those priorities in place that's really important. Mm-hmm. You know?
Joy, Jesus, others, yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds like a nun. Did you have any nuns?
Yep. I probably saw it on TV or something, Mother Angelica or something.
Yeah. But putting God first is always is the most important thing, because that kind of sets the tone for almost everything else. If you put Him first, then when you first get up in the morning, you say some prayers. Even if it's not a lot, you at least put Him the first thing in the day when you wake up. Say, you know, even if it's something like, I dedicate this day to You, help me live it the way You want me to live it, or something simple like that, you know, anything.
Mm.
But acknowledging Him as the priority thing in your life is the important thing.
You know what I... Because you don't do it every day. You make good resolutions, right? Of course. But I find the best, if I can keep to it, is if I do a chore, and then after that, pray a little. Not from a book, but pray. And then do another chore. And then pray. And then do another chore. And if the day goes balanced nicely, instead of...
Yeah, that's a good idea.
That's how I can remember doing something like that.
You know,
like, break it up.
I never used to notice, like, nature and animals. And then as I, you know, your faith journey.
Yeah.
So I'm driving home, you know, 7 hours in the car. And you only can listen to radio so much. And then I'm, like, looking at the clouds while not having an accident. And I'm, like, trying to see angels in the clouds.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at, and then you go over the mountain, the hills, and you see Pennsylvania. And I'm like, gosh, it's so pretty. It's so beautiful. God made that, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So you have to take that time.
That's it.
You know,
that's right.
He probably just gave you that thought too.
Yeah.
Because I turn off the radio after a while. I'm like, okay, I'm burned out.
That's exactly why when I I live 25 miles.
I listen to the Catholic station.
Yeah. I live 25 miles away.
Wow.
And so every day coming is a 25 mile drive. So I say the rosary.
Yeah.
On the while I'm going, and the chaplet to Blessed Mother, Lady of Perpetual Help, and. That takes me about almost to Orrington, and then I talk about what my mass is dedicated to for that day, you know, for the rest of the trip.
Yeah.
And but I always take the back roads, because if you go down Route 17 or something, big highways and all, it's not pretty.
Right.
You know, there's nothing really attractive
about
a bunch of blacktop highway, right?
No.
But you drive down these little back roads and see all these people with flower gardens and things and see animals and pretty trees and everything else. And it just keeps you aware of God's creation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I like a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Me too. And I noticed another thing that, like, I don't know if this ever bothered me before, but they did a rosary on the Catholic station. It was Sunday, so, you know, when I heard it. That guy said it so fast.
Oh.
And I'm going, okay, I can't even keep up with
you. You know what? There's lots of rosary CDs. You'll find one that you love.
I just had the station on, and I'm like,
There's a scriptural rosary that's really fun.
Well, I have a Legion one, but I just had it on in the station. I go, does that bother God that this... Man is saying it so fast, and he doesn't, he just says, and uses, you know, and the mystery just says a line, he doesn't read it. And you're like, are we in a rush here? Why is he saying it so fast?
Yeah. John Paul II had a scriptural rosary.
Mm-hmm. And,
and so he was, it was fun to listen to. Okay, 5291. It says the soul isn't sure what to do. It says we are powerless, however much we do, to bring about this favor until God is again pleased to grant it. So once again, she's desiring this close relationship with God, but she knows there's nothing she can do to cause it to happen. He has to bring her there to happen. Briefly, in one way or another, there must be a cross while we live. Take up your cross daily and follow me, Jesus said. And with respect to anyone who says that after he arrived here, he always enjoyed rest and delight, I would say that he never arrived, but that perhaps he had experienced some spiritual delight if he had entered the previous dwelling place, and his experience had been helped along by natural weakness, or perhaps even by the devil, who gives him peace so as afterward to wage much greater war against him. So what are the various things she's telling us in this one paragraph here? There are a couple of different things she's getting, making a point about here.
That we can really be duped by the devil.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
One is to keep you happy where you are.
Yeah.
Don't want to progress. You know, because if he can get you to kind of stop and be really happy with where you are, you're going to regress. You know, you can't just stay in place in your spiritual growth. Marching in place doesn't work. You know, so that's one of the things she's talking about here. And if somebody who says he has the experience of God is total joy and everything else, and it never stops and everything, you haven't really gotten here.
Yeah.
Because you're always going to have some kind of penance or some kind of cross. Because Jesus said, take up your cross every day and follow me. I was on an internet discussion group with a guy years ago. He had a whole bunch of people. And he used to come on and say that the Holy Trinity would come visit him in his apartment, and they would kick up, open a couple of beers and watch TV and stuff like this, you know.
What?
Yeah.
This
guy was a complete loony bin, right? Yeah. But some people were kind of believing that he was telling the truth. And so I really took him to task, you know, because he was deluding people. I mean, the Holy Spirit is he said, I just call them and they come. So they're not a puppy dog in the first place. You don't command God, you know. I mean, he was saying so many things that were so stupid. But some people think, well, man, he must be really holy. You know, he calls the Holy Spirit and he comes. And all. So I really got on his case big time about that. But it's... But some people, you know, they want to live in this perpetual state of bliss. And that's not what our life on earth is supposed to be. You know, we take up our cross every day and follow Christ. We don't get to that stage until we get to heaven. Then everything is peaceful. It says in the book of Revelation, all the tears are wiped away at that point. Right? No more sadness.
Like Father Brian's comment, I think it was last week, fake it till you make it.
Yeah. What was he talking about? Faking what?
Joy.
Oh.
Joy.
Just a happy outlook on life.
Yeah.
You can't be happy every minute, but
you
need to work on having that outlook.
So you know, I was watching EWTN 2 weeks ago, and I think it was Father Lundgren. He's from the Diocese of Cheyenne. He's the cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
He was vibrant, filled with joy, and he said, I wish I saw more joy in Christianity. He said, it's joy. You have trials and everything. And he ministers to the cowboys and the ranchers. He was on, it was an hour show, and he wrote a book. So I got it from EWTN.
I did too. I ordered it for birthday or Christmas presents for the guys.
You know who I gave it to?
What show was he on?
Father Brian.
Wednesday night show.
Oh yeah.
And Father Mitch had gone out and rode with him.
Oh,
our friend
really?
Ray had gone out and they rounded up cattle they had.
Yeah, so I don't know. So They said it was 3 weeks backlog, but I got it like in a couple of days. Yeah. I gave it Father Brian on Sunday. I said, I thought of you because you ride the motorcycle and this priest rides a horse. So, and they say the book is going like wildfire.
Really?
Is that right?
Yeah.
What's it called?
The Catholic Cowboy Way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. EWTN. I think it was 1695 or something. It's not a big book.
Uh-huh.
But,
well, I think we're supposed to have peace. Peace.
Oh, yeah. And joy.
Well, you got to understand the difference between happiness and joy,
right.
too.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Joy can be a perpetual state regardless. Happiness is always transitory.
Right.
You're happy, and then what made you happy, now you want more. Because now the happiness kind of wears off.
Yeah.
And then you want more. But joy can be always there because you know you're a child of God.
Yeah.
Just that fact alone can keep you in a state of perpetual joy.
I think the devil can get people with shopping that you want that constant.
Yeah.
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 You know.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And then you get it and you're like, oh, okay, moving on.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the happiness is almost always transitory. But joy can be a perpetual thing. Mm-hmm. And until you understand that, you don't really understand where you are.
Yeah. It's like an obsession, too. They want to be happy.
Right.
I think one priest said, you want to be happy, just forget yourself.
There's a lot of truth to that. Yeah.
And as Christians, we're supposed to be happy, or at least feel peace, because we're going to win.
Yeah.
So.
But what does Teresa tell us? How do you know how much you love God by how much you love your neighbor? Well, if you're spending a lot of time loving your neighbor, you're not loving yourself. You know?
Yeah.
You're not always thinking about yourself and what you want and everything. So I almost got that little bug. So flying around driving all of us crazy.
I think it's only one.
Yeah.
Must be.
So in this dwelling place, God is in control, so we experience this union if and when God wills it. In this dwelling place, we experience our crosses. So we experience the union, the joy of union with God, but we also experience our crosses, and we're going to experience those every day till the day we die. Have you encountered people who thought they were experiencing union but are really deluded, as Teresa describes?
Well, you said that one fella.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are a lot of people like that, you know?
Yeah.
I think some of these televangelists are like that.
Yeah, right, the guys on TV.
What
about
that Joel Osteen? This whole thing is about you're supposed to get all the wealth that you want.
Right, pray to God for wealth.
You ever see his house is $18 million?
I've heard of it.
And then his wife divorced him.
Did she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here he is telling us, I'm a man of God, and yet I'm giving myself all this stuff, and my wife divorced me. And yet I'm still going to tell you how you should relate to God.
The prosperity gospel, they call it.
Yeah, the prosperity gospel.
Yes.
Exactly.
I heard about that, yeah.
Yep.
He's got a radio. He's on Sirius Radio.
Yeah.
That's flipping
he's got a lot of shows. Yeah, he's on YouTube and everything else.
He writes a lot of books, I'm sure he
does. Makes a ton of money.
Yeah.
And every time he talks, he's passing the plate.
Yeah.
Yep. He wants some money for his ministry.
Yeah. It'd
be interesting to hear why his wife divorced him.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to look it up. I didn't know she did.
Yep.
Yeah.
He was on Larry King Live years ago. I remember watching him. He smiled a lot. And Larry King said, you smile a lot. I'm like, odd thing to say. What's
He's like, although Larry King was married 5 times, right?
And
he wasn't smiling.
He's paying out too much alimony to smile. Okay, 5:2:10:1. She says, I don't mean to say that those who arrive here do not have peace. They do have it, and it's very deep. So she's really talking about joy here, the peace she's talking about. But the trials themselves are so valuable and have such good roots that although very severe, they give rise to peace and happiness. From the very unhappiness caused by worldly things arises the ever so painful desire to leave this world. Any relief the soul has comes from the thought that God wants it to be living in this exile. Yet even this is not enough, because in spite of all these benefits, it is not entirely surrendered to God's will, as will be seen further on. Although it doesn't fail to conform itself, but it conforms with a great feeling that it can do no more because no more has been given it, and with great feelings that it, and with many tears. Every time it is in prayer, this regret is its pain. In some ways, perhaps, the sorrow proceeds from this deep pain it feels at seeing that God is offended and little esteemed in this world, and that many souls are lost, heretics as well as Moors. What are the Moors?
Muslims.
The Moors were
invaded.
Yeah, they were
Spain.
They invaded Spain in her time, so that was a big deal.
Yeah.
There was a battle between the Moors and the Spaniards to try to drive the Moors out of Spain. So she was in the midst of all that stuff.
Battle of Lepanto.
So she brings
Lepanto,
she,
yeah, I think,
so it's, she brings the politics even into her, her book here. So what is she saying here?
She's saying that you're following God's will, but you're not doing it totally.
And how does she know that?
She says because you conform with a great feeling that it could do more, because there's no more has been given it, even with many tears.
Yeah. So she talks about people having joy, but since they give rise to peace and happiness, but the very unhappiness caused by worldly things. So this is the worldly things that are causing all the unhappiness for her. And she's also very concerned that a lot of souls are being lost.
But that's a real sadness.
Yeah. And so she doesn't like the fact that souls are being lost, because one of the things that the sisters do is pray for people. They want everybody to be saved, right? So whenever a soul is lost, that makes her feel bad. I guess one of her missions is to pray for her souls. So she says this, the soul is conforming itself, but it conforms with a great feeling that it can do no more, but yet it feels it's supposed to do more, it wants to do more. And so it's in a kind of a conundrum. It's trying to do more on its own. It says, I want to do more, but I don't know what to do. I don't know how. And she's basically saying, I can't do any more until God does it for me.
Because they haven't fully surrendered.
Right.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
God sees our desire, but he's the one that accomplishes the desire.
Yeah. And so even if you have completely surrendered to God, it's still up to him when to bring you forward in this prayer journey. And so part of this is kind of an impatience on her part. You know, she wants to go further, but she doesn't know how to do it. She's going as far as she can, and she's sitting there waiting. Okay, God, you know, it's a little bit impatience.
Else to do.
You know, give me something to do, take me where they want me to do the next step at all. She wants to do more, but she doesn't know what it is he wants her to do.
Wouldn't that make you more humble, too? You know?
Yeah, because you're totally dependent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't, you realize you can't do it.
Yeah.
Or yourself.
You're totally dependent on God for that. So those are the kind of things that that she's struggling with here. And so this is the fifth dwelling place. So this continues to struggle until, and she's only in, don't forget, this is only what she calls the meeting phase. You know, where you're getting to know each other. So it's, the betrothal doesn't come till the sixth dwelling place. So there's still more to go in this journey here. So if you meet somebody who's in this state, would you recognize it? What would you expect to see in them? Would you even recognize somebody who's in this state? I don't know if you would.
They express themselves.
Yeah. Unless they express themselves.
Right.
But then it'd be just complaining, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure.
Right. Because that's a deep spiritual thing.
It is.
Open up. Unless somebody opened up, I guess.
Yeah. So somebody described where they were to you. You could see that their joy was there. Because they know they're in union with God. But you can see their frustration at not going further, faster. And so you just tell them, hey, wait, cool your jets, you know. It's coming.
I just got this thought now. It might be wrong. Say you know a person who is religious, you know, and follows right. Christ and everything, but they talk and they're frustrated because in dealing with worldly things, I want to get ahead and I want to get a raise, I want to advance and I can't do it and blah, blah, blah. I wonder, is it your inward something's feelings coming out? Could that be tied to religion to a degree? I don't know. It's like it's your nature.
Well, it's two different worlds.
Yeah, two worlds.
You remember Jesus
yeah.
said to give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar and give to God what belongs to
yeah.
God. And so when you're worried about your job and stuff like that, that's got nothing to do
yeah,
with
it. Yeah, no connection. Right
no connection,
the,
right?
Yeah,
so it's, that's Caesar. And you need yeah. Caesar because you need income
right.
to live with. Got to make your house payments and
yeah.
put food on the table and everything else. So yeah. it's a need, but it's not a spiritual need.
And you couldn't judge a person by the way they're saying that because
no.
it's just
it's a worldly
things.
Need. Because
yeah.
you need sustenance to live. And you need money for sustenance.
Right, right.
You know, you can't go to grocery and say, gee, I'd love to have some of your groceries. Would you please give them to me? You know, they say, well, where's your money?
So you can't really judge people like in this question.
No,
right.
Not really.
No. Yeah.
But you look at this, you look at their spiritual life. You know, because if somebody is out in the world working and for some reason they lose their job, if they just say, oh, well, I'll go find another one, that's a good sign. Because it isn't the job that's got them wrapped up.
Right, right.
It's just the need to make a living.
Yeah.
And they feel that they can probably do that other ways as well. They don't feel so totally trapped in this one way. And then you look at, you talk about their spiritual life with them, and you see, where are you? You kind of get a sense of, are you on the right path, you know?
Mm.
So that's always a good thing.
Mm.
You know, what is your prayer life like? And those kind of things. It's the first question you ask somebody when you're going to do spiritual direction for them. What's your prayer life like?
Oh.
That's always the first question.
Mm.
It's very telling. You know, when somebody just tries to describe their prayer life to you. It's interesting.
Mm.
So after talking about the grief felt by the soul in section 11 that we just talked about, she concludes by saying, but such grief doesn't reach the intimate depths of our being as does the pain suffered in this state. For it seems that the pain breaks and grinds the soul into pieces without the soul striving for it or even at times wanting it. Well, what is this pain? Where does it come from? She then says, I shall tell you. And then she begins in section 12, tell us what this pain is and where it comes from. And she says, after speaking of God, putting love in order in the soul through these encounters and meetings, Teresa then says, since that soul now surrenders itself into his hands, and his great love makes it so surrendered that it neither knows nor wants anything more than what he wants with her, for God will never, in my judgment, grant this favor save to a soul that he takes for his own. He desires that. And so what God desires, he desires that without its understanding how it may go forth from this union impressed with his seal. This is reminiscent of the seal the angels will impress on the chosen as described in the book of Revelation. So he kind of seals the soul when it gets to a certain point. He puts his mark on the soul, your mind. Satan, you know, if you look at Revelation, remember? He talks about how God is going to put his mark on the soul and the devil's going to put his mark on people. And, you know, the thing in the hand and the forehead and stuff.
Mm.
And people keep saying, well, the little chips they want to do is that and all. But anyway, they brand you, like cattle. You put a brand on a cattle, right? You say, this cattle belongs to me. Well, God puts his brand on us and he says, you're mine now. And so that's a sign to the devil. Leave that person alone. That belongs to me.
Doesn't that happen at the sacraments of initiation? Doesn't that happen through baptism and through confirmation?
I thought it was confirmation. They put a seal. I think we learned there was a seal on your soul or something when you were confirmed out.
Yeah.
I thought so too.
Yeah. Every sacrament gives you a seal of some kind, a sign. But what she's talking about here is something special. Like, you know, in Revelation it says, toward the end of the world, the angels will come around and identify all the people of God and put this special, they called it a tau, which is a Greek letter that looks like a cross on the souls of all the people. And so there are a lot of different kind of seals that people can have. You know, when you're ordained, you get the seal of the ordination. That's an indelible seal on your seal. You're always a priest after that, regardless of what happens. Even if you're defrocked, you're still a priest.
Is there a cross? I don't know. And then there's a P on the top of something? I don't know. One priest I knew said had letterhead, and it was...
Yeah.
That's a symbol of Christ, something. I think.
It is.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It is.
But he's talking about tau, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's
which
different.
Which looks kind of...
Yeah, it's a Greek letter. It looks kind of like a T.
Oh, okay.
Got a little thing with a little thing on both sides. But God is sealing you with a special seal here. Mm. It's saying you're mine now. And so that's an important thing here. Mm. She says he desires that without this understanding of how. So the soul is being captured by God, and it has no idea how. He just does it. And you just kind of go along for the ride, you know. Mm. It's because you have no control over it, right? It's, whoa! It's what a roller coaster this is, you know? And so he desires that without his understanding, it may go forth from this union impressed with his seal. So he puts that special seal on you, but you don't know how he does it. You just receive it, and that's it, you know? For indeed the soul does no more in this union than does the wax when another impresses a seal on it. Back in her day, you know, they would use that hot red wax and put a seal on it. Same kind of thing she's talking about here. The soul is only disposed and remains still and gives its consent. So God comes to put his seal on you, and you're just disposed. You don't know how he's going to do it, what, no, or anything else. He just does it. But you open yourself up and say, okay, I want to be sealed by your seal. I want to belong to you. And that's the desire of the soul. And you don't really care how he does it. As long as he's putting his seal on you and you belong to him, you don't really care. As long as it happens. It's kind of like Mary at the Annunciation. This is, may it be done to me according to your word. A lot of things about that whole thing with the Annunciation she didn't understand. Mm-hmm. But she didn't care. If it's what God wanted, she was going to say yes. The soul, therefore, is in such a condition because of the prayer of union that it is entirely docile to whatever God wills to do with it. What does the soul have to accept or believe to be this docile?
God knows best.
Yeah.
Are you always right?
Everything.
Right? God knows best. He's going to work it out the right way.
They have to believe that God's infinite love for the soul is the paramount thing. And that he will never do anything to the soul that's spiritually detrimental to it. So whatever he wants to give you is going to be a good. Regardless of what it looks like or feels like, it's going to be good. And you just got to trust that. It's like taking your little child to the swimming pool at the deep end. Say, go up on that board and jump down to me. Child can't swim. Jump down to me and I'll catch you. That child goes up there and jumps.
Yeah.
You know, expects daddy to catch her. Yeah. It's that kind of thing. A total trust in God. Mm. Just like he said in Faustina, you know, it bothers him when you don't trust him.
Yeah.
And here the soul has got to trust God completely and not care what he wants to do with it. Whatever you want to do with me, do it. You know. Then at 13, Teresa then teaches how God works in the soul so that it can recognize itself as his own. So now you've got the seal. Now you want to be able to recognize yourself as having that seal. You want to look down and look at your belly and say, oh, look at that seal. You know, I got my seal.
I got my stamp,
you know. Given the soul from what he has, which is what Jesus had in his time among us on earth, he cannot grant us a higher favor. She then asked Jesus why he wasn't thinking about the terrible suffering he was about to endure at his passion. So now she's talking to God and asking, why didn't you worry about this passion you were about to undergo? And he responds, no. My great love and the desire I have that souls be saved are incomparably more important than these sufferings. And the very greatest sorrow that I have suffered and do suffer after being in the world are not enough to be considered anything at all in comparison with this love and desire to save souls. Because he wants more than anything else in the world to save souls. When a soul that's in sin repents, there's such joy. Because now you're mine. Yeah. Now you're mine. He's trying to build his kingdom. You know, a lot of people think of the kingdom of God as a place. I think we talked about that before. Mm. It's really us. You know? Mm-hmm. He wants the biggest kingdom he can possibly get. Mm. And that means as many souls as he can possibly get. That's why Satan's always trying to capture souls. Mm. To keep his kingdom from being as big as it should be. Or it could be. It's the only way he can do anything to God. He can't hurt God. So the soul's got to be extremely docile and just say whatever, you know. So when he was thinking about his passion, that was an interesting question that Teresa asked Jesus. And an interesting answer that he gave too, because as terrible as his suffering was, it was temporary. You figure it started, what, on Thursday night, ended on Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock. So it was not even a whole 24 hours. It was awful. Terrible suffering. But he knew it was only temporary. Then he knew he was going to resurrect because he predicted that. He knew that was going to happen.
And he knew he was going to save souls.
And his suffering was going to be the thing that saved souls. Yeah.
But sometimes we're made to feel like his suffering is present and that we're participating in a different theological...
Yeah, he has a different kind of suffering now. Yeah.
And the time thing and the Eucharist.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
His soul still suffers every time a soul is lost to hell.
Mm.
Every time a soul goes to hell. Because he loves that soul.
Mm.
Regardless of how bad the person is, he loves that soul. And he doesn't want that soul to go to hell. But it does. A lot of them do. Blessed Mother was telling the children of Fatima, souls are falling into hell all the time.
Mm.
Sometimes because they have nobody to pray for them. And so that's part of our job, is to pray for all those souls, you know, for their conversion. Because that's our responsibility. You know, we can't just pray for ourselves. We've got to pray for everybody else too. But he continues to suffer, and so does the Blessed Mother, for the same reasons. You know, because those are her children too. Think of God the Father, who loves you with an infinite love, and he sees a child that he loves going to hell, rejecting him. You can imagine how an earthly father would feel if their child rejected him and said, I hate you, and I'm going to go to, I don't ever want to see you again. I want to go somewhere else.
Mm.
Think how that would hurt. And then multiply that infinitely because of his infinite love.
Mm.
I mean, it's, you know, every soul that goes to hell, you know, is a suffering for Jesus and the Blessed Mother.
And you just look. I mean, what you see on TV, the way the world lives.
Yeah.
And the way that people live. I mean, that's because Jesus is constantly seeing that suffering.
Yeah.
Besides not paying attention to him and loving him, look what they're doing, killing all the babies.
Yeah.
You know, all this must be horrible.
Have you guys heard of the book Return of the Gods by Jonathan Cain?
No.
He's a Protestant.
Oh.
It talks about that.
Really?
And I think you should read it and give us a report.
Okay.
That'll work.
Yeah. Send me the reference to that.
Okay.
Yeah, just because I'll forget the title by the time I get home. I got a mind like a sip.
I heard interviewed on Prize on TBN. It's unbelievable.
Hmm. Yeah, sounds good. So Jesus says, I have suffered and I do suffer. And so he still suffers, you know, even in his kingdom because of the loss of his children.
I think he's going to suffer to the end of time.
Yeah, you know? Probably so, because people will be going to hell till the end of time.
Yeah,
you know, he's reaching out to them all the time, but obviously they're numb to it or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, Jesus says, many are called, but few are chosen. Yeah, he's calling his children all the time, like any loving father would.
Mm.
But they have to respond. And it's 10:38. We got a quote.
Mm.
So we'll pick up at 2:14 next time. Any final thoughts before we leave for the day? Okay.
Okay.
We shall see you next time. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Have a great
blessed
week. Have a great week.